Welcome to another message of hope from Gateway Family Church. For more information or to contact us, please visit gateway.asn.au.
Father, thank you for your presence. No matter what sort of a week we've had, your presence is always amongst us. Amen. Amen. Thanks, guys. Well done. Thank you. Good morning. As you pull out your outlines and pull out your pen and check if they're working on the person next to you's hand or their neck or in their ear hole. Welcome to our podcast guests and our guests out in the baby lounge area too. Recently I had the opportunity to take some of our young leaders from around Australia to Canberra with Philip Mutzelberg, who is part of our A2A team. And these are emerging leaders within our movement from various parts of Australia. We went to Canberra, and the whole point of those few days in Canberra was to help these young leaders, 20 to 30-year-olds, to expand their worldview beyond the silo and the subcultures that they operate in. And so here we are in Canberra, and one of the things we did, we went to the National Art Gallery. And in the National Art Gallery, saw some absolutely amazing works. Marcy Painter's work was up there, which was fantastic. And it was really good. And I walked out of there looking at this brilliant artwork thinking, you know what? There's giftedness in action. And the artists are faithful to creativity. Another thing that we did to help them expand their worldview was take them to the High Court. The High Court protects your constitution and interprets it on our behalf. So in the High Court, they weren't sitting that day. So we had the privilege of having a private tour. So we take these young leaders into there. And what was immediately obvious was, here's the seven High Court judges' seats, high up, just sitting there. Below them is 12 seats facing the High Court judges, looking up at them. Now these seats are below or down, looking up, are filled with the best of the best barristers. The High Court judges are the best of the best in Australia. The barristers who are representing their clients on constitutional issues and bring it before the High Court, they are the best of the best. So much so that those barristers, some of them can earn $50,000 a day representing a client. Here's the interesting part. If the seven High Court judges, the best of the best, make a ruling against the client's request, it's game over. There's no court of appeal. There's no Hollywood thing where they argue and debate. The best of the best barristers accept it, respect the office of the High Court, done deal. And I walked out of there thinking, wow, that's authority in action. They are faithful to integrity. Another thing we did was take them to the war memorial. And even as we parked our minibus and walking towards the memorial there in Canberra, there's tens of thousands of red poppies just laid in the lawn before you've even got into the memorial and the museum there. And each one of those poppies represents an Australian life that's been lost serving in overseas war conflicts over the last 100 years or so. Very powerful. And so I walked out of there thinking, gee, sacrifice in action. They are faithful to country. And then when you go inside there, there's also a museum there. And we spent several hours in the war museum and didn't see everything. And I came across this space that is almost like a sacred space in the museum part. And that sacred space represented the Victoria Cross winners. The Victoria Cross Award is for the highest degree of bravery that can be done in the most violent battle situation. And it is so rare to win that award that only three Aussies in the last 40 years or so in all the armed conflicts around the world have won that Victoria Cross Award. And I read the stories and I found the thread that all the Victoria Cross winners, and there's not many of them, what I found the common thread was that their act of extreme bravery was in situations where one of their mates was in trouble. And what prompted them to go out and face a hail of machine gun bullets would be if a mate was out in the open area and he's injured and machine guns are trying to finish him off. Or he's little infantry group is over here being bombed, and they're caught, and they're getting crossfired, and they're about to be perish. That at those moments, the Victoria Cross winners would go out without even thinking to protect their mates and drag back the injured person, or attack 100 enemy soldiers to make sure his mates were looked after. It's the highest award, so much so that if you are a winner, recipient of that award, and you are not just a private, and you win the Victoria Cross, in the Australian tradition is that even the highest ranking officer in the whole battalion or the whole army area, as he walks past you, he will initiate a salute to you because you're a Victoria Cross winner, out of respect and honour to what you've done. Low infantryman, highest, will just salute him out of respect. Very high award. I walked out of there thinking, gee, there's courage in action. And they are faithful to mateship. And while I was in there in the museum, I noticed to my right this group, semi-large group, quietly coming through. And as soon as I turned and looked at them, I knew straight away, in a second, that they were SAS soldiers. And they were coming, and they had a tour guide, a military historian, taken around into the museum. And how I knew they were SAS, Special Armed Services Regiment guys, is because they were built like brick outhouses, for a start. And they got in front of an area, and the historian was giving them military points of law of interest. And what I noticed was that these SAS, the best of the best, they were quiet. They were unobtrusive. They were respectful. They didn't strut and have bling on and be standing there doing all this. They were just comfortable in their own skin. And you could feel it from 10 feet away, this strength and this determination. And they were comfortable in who they were. What I did was I gave my group the flick and latched onto that group, because the guy leading it was brilliant. He was obviously the best of the best to show them around. And I stayed 3 metres back out of respect, because that was their group. So I stayed about 3 metres back just so I could just listen to the historian. I also stayed 3 metres back because I didn't want to get hurt in any shape or any way along the way. But I did walk out and I thought, gee, there's readiness in action. They are faithful to obedience. They're told go, they go. That's it. And so when I look at that situation, I thought, I'm going to look up the word and see what faithful means. And faithful, when I looked it up this week, reflecting on the Canberra trip, means showing faith. Showing faith. And it's where someone has a stance where they're loyal, on your outline there. Keep working with them, fill in your outline, get some good stuff into you. Where they are loyal, they are constant, they are conscientious, they are trustworthy. So the artists, various artists in Canberra, are loyal, constant, conscientious, trustworthy to creativity. The Victoria Cross winners are loyal, constant, conscientious, trustworthy towards their mates. The SAS soldiers are loyal, constant, conscientious, trustworthy towards obedience. They are being faithful. A Christ follower is actually called a disciple. That word's used about 170 times in the New Testament. So there, a Christ follower is a disciple or an apprentice of Jesus. The word Christian's only used once in the New Testament. And it's been so dumbed down and profiled down over the decades that the word Christian in our culture, if we're being real about it, means someone who's nice. Someone who's soft. Someone who's cuddly. Someone who's conservative. But a Christ follower, a disciple of Christ, when you read the New Testament, is marked by, in your outline, faith in action. They are faithful to Jesus. A Christ follower is loyal, constant, conscientious, trustworthy towards Christ. No ifs, no buts. Why is that so? As disciples of Christ or Christians, if we go with the generic brand name, we can squabble and argue and gossip about baptism. Should it be sprinkled or should it be fully immersed? Should the band be loud or less proud? Should our worship leaders have holes in their knees and jeans when they're up on top? Like, we can argue about all that, no problem. It's quite entertaining, actually, over the decades as Rick and I have watched it. But when Christ is involved in all that, as he would have been in his culture, he brings it all down. And he just brings it down. And he brings it down, and he brings it down, and he brings it simply down to one key thing. And he brings it to this point, and he goes, you know what? If you love me, you will obey my commands. Bang, bang, bang. But we hang around with all the other stuff and worry, let's bang. A Christ follower responds to that because they place their faith in they trust fully in the character of God. A Christ follower, different from a cuddly Christian, I don't mean a derogative one, it's just how I see the world. But a Christ follower is someone whose faith is placed in fully trusting in the character of God. And look what the psalmist says. Look what David says about the character of God. But you, O Lord, are a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding love and faithfulness. God is loyal. God is constant. God is conscientious. He is trustworthy towards his people. God is faithful. And look at another part of the psalmist says. He says, for the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. God is loyal. He is constant. He is conscientious. He is trustworthy towards his people through all the generations. God is faithful. I love that verse because through all the generations, whether it's the grey heads or the baby-making factories on two legs that's been happening around here, or the young people with all their quiet dreams and aspirations, God is faithful across the generations. I'm fortunate to have a younger sister who lives overseas. Why am I fortunate? Because she's got a really nice holiday home down on the Great Ocean Road, a place called Aries Inlet. And this is on podcast, so I shouldn't say this, but I think I'm the only family member who's got a key to the place. But Sal and I've worked out that we go down there on average about once a year for a few days. We need to get down there more. But when you walk out, my sister who lives overseas, the house is empty most of the year. And when you go and turn left and walk to the end of the street, you walk through the scrub at the end of the street, about a metre wide path, watch the prickles, you come to a cliff top. You stand on the cliff top and there's nothing between you and the Antarctic. To your right is Aries Lighthouse. Beyond that, 15K, you can see Lorne. To your left are the heads. You look further, you can see Arthur's Seat. Sky is blue, ocean is blue. In the distance, you can see surfers just catching the waves far off in the distance. Absolutely magic by day. I've been known to regularly at night go to the same place and spend an hour or two there on my own. So I'll go there in the darkest of the night, and it's dark, and I'll go to the end of the street, and then I'll walk through the scrub, and I'll get to this secluded bench. And there's just this bench sitting there on the cliff top. And you sit down there, and all around you is the scrub. There's no houses nearby. There's nothing. and you just sit there in this pitch black darkness between you and the Antarctic. Absolutely nothing. You can't see. And over time, as you sit there, and as your night eyes start to adjust and kick in, over a period of time, if you are patient and sit there, you start to see the beauty coming out. And first thing you notice is the ocean's gone flat at night. It's flat, and it just sparkles on the water from here as far as your eye can see. And then you look up, and you'll see stars, thousands of stars starting to show. And the more you just sit there in that pitch black and just look, you see tens of thousands of stars. And after you've sat there for an hour or two, there is millions of stars between you and the Antarctic, and they are so close you can touch them. God's faithfulness is like that. God's faithfulness will dazzle you gradually. What do I mean by that? You can stand in life, you're standing on your cliff top in the daylight, it's obvious you're going to get that job promotion. It's obvious that you've planned your kids' future life. It's obvious the next car you're buying. It's obvious the next house you're buying. All good things. It's obvious where your next holiday is. It's obvious, which means it's not faith, because that's obvious. But in your life, when you're in your life, faith life, and you're in the darkest of the dark, and you can't see anything, and you don't even know if you're going to be able to pay the bill tomorrow, and you don't know if that serious illness in your family has really got to a game over stage, you don't know if your marriage is going to make it. And in that darkness, if you trust in the character of God, and you sit in that darkness, fellow disciple, and you trust in the character of God, over time, he will reveal himself, and you'll be slowly dazzled over time. I wish I could say it was an instant thing. It's not. God's faithfulness will dazzle you gradually. You just have to sit in that and trust it. Does that make sense? It's just part of the Christian journey. And in years to come, and months after, you look back, you go, he was there. He was there in that time. And it's so precious for you. Hard, but it's precious. Stay there and trust him. How should we respond to God's faithfulness? I love the Apostle Paul. The older I get, the more I love him. I don't want to be on a desert island with him. So he's a hard-nosed. But he's a church leader, church planner, loves his local churches, plants them, all these things. And he's speaking to these local churches. And look what he says to them about how they should respond to the trust and trust in the faithfulness of God. And he says, so here's what I want you to do. God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, AFL, going to work and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognise what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, says Paul, which is always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, social media, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. How does he do that? Every day, what I'm about to say will threaten the cuddlies, but what I'm about to say, a disciple will go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, I hear you, mate. Every day, we all get opportunities to take another small step in maturity. Every day, just one small step as we just trust in God's faithfulness to us, being real to us. We just inch forward. Every day we get three distinct opportunities to grow on the inside in our maturity. First one is time. What we do with our time. Am I offering it back to you, Lord, and just spending a bit of time with you each day to hang out with you? Am I offering time to my neighbour? Am I offering time to the faith community that I get so much out of? Or is it all mine? Mine, mine, mine. Another step, a small step we can take in growing in our maturity. Another small step is in our talents, the giftings that God gives us. You know, Lord, step me forward and I can use my abilities and my talents in my workplace Monday to Friday, in the schools and colleges. Or do we just hang around and do Joe Average and say, you know what, I just want to be an average student. I just want to be an average worker, not be noticed. Or do we say, you know what, I'm offering back to God what he's deliberately given me and being the best of the best in that situation. Another third way that we can take a step in maturity is with our treasure. This is where the cuddlies get really uncomfortable. But a disciple goes, yep, Lord, I'm listening. Because each one of you is different. That's between you and God. But he does prompt us about being generous. And when we look at that, we lay it back on the altar and we say, okay, Lord, speak to me. He says, you know what? There's a whole stack of children's work in New Guinea. We're only up to 300 kids. Let's go for 500. Let's be generous to our neighbours down the road whose engine's just seized up. To the kid at school who's got a single parent. What can I give their way? How can I step up in the faith community that I get so much out of? And so back in my generosity there, Lord, what offer? Show me, Lord, show me what you would have me to do. We get that every day. And a disciple steps forward and goes, okay, I'm listening. I'm scared, but I'm listening, Lord. The cuddlies go, whoa, it's mine. It's mine, mine, mine. It's all mine. I know you're getting it because you're very quiet. Rick Warren is someone that Rick and I admired for decades as a local church pastor. And look what he says. He says, nothing shapes your life more than the commitments you choose to make, Mark. Your commitments can develop you or they can destroy you. But either way, they will define you. Tell me what you are committed to, says Rick Warren, and I'll tell you what you'll be in 20 years' time. We become whatever we are committed to. I think he's on the money there. Sally and I are fortunate to live in a spot in Langwarrin that is dead quiet. Your homes may be quiet. Our home is dead quiet. Dead quiet. And you can hear a leaf drop on the veranda. It's that quiet. And we've been there for 30-odd years and, you know, it's just always dead quiet. The other night, about 3 a.m. in the morning, I heard this on the veranda right next to our bedroom windows. I heard the boom, boom, boom. So on the Merbu decking, I could hear it. And I thought, no, that's movement. There's a body moving along the veranda. And I thought that was interesting because none of the spotties had come on. So what's going on? So anyway, straight after that, I've just got up my elbows listening. And all of a sudden, there's smash, bang, smash, bang, smash, bang. And the veranda's shaking. The noise was horrific. And Sally's yelling, what's going on? I've already half out of bed. I've gone over to the side door. As I swung it open, all our spotties are on these lights. So I've just gone bang with the spotlights out the door. And I'm yelling as loud as I could into the situation. Because sometimes it's okay to be a cuddly Christian. Sometimes you've got to step into it. So as Sally will test for, I'm yelling at 3 a.m. in the morning in a quiet area. I'm just going for it. What the hell are you doing? Yelling out. And sure enough, there's the mess. Everywhere. Just smashed. I look up, and then he's looking at me, and I'm thinking, this is interesting, because he's the same height as me. And I'm looking at him, and I'm still yelling. And my dad used to be in the law enforcement, so they're okay. Step towards him, keep intimidating. So I'm yelling, full on. He's not moving. I'm thinking, I'm in trouble. What do I do now? Then he yells at me, and he goes, why are you totally nude? And I yell back. I yelled back at him, well, why have you got a possum suit on? This possum was this big. It was huge. All right. It was this big, up on the railing. Next morning, I was shooting off to work and I thought, oh, no, clean it up, get it done. got grandkids and all, got grandkids. So went and grabbed the bin and cleaned up all the ceramic pottery and cleaned all, threw it in the bin and did that. And then I grabbed the plants, thought, you know what? It's near where the cars are parked. There's some other, we've got some topsoil and some pottery pots, and I can replant these real quick. So I took them around and picked up the first plant, and as I went to repot it, I looked at it and went, and the roots were all so dry, they're like really old cardboard, and they just fell off. As I touched them, they fell off. Just threw it away. Oh, I better check the second plant. Sally's plants. Because mine are all watered. And I looked at it, and I looked really closely. Oh, the roots, no, they're supple. They're moist. Yep, okay, and the plant, oh no, that's good. Good to go. And I put it back in the pot and topsoil, jogged it round to the spot, put it there, jumped in the car to go. Your body is like a ceramic pot. And you're living your eternity, because you are living your eternity right now. Well, your body is a ceramic pot. But the other, when you step on the other side of eternity like that and you breathe your last, which I know the young people have no idea what I'm talking about, so I'll talk to this side. I'll talk to myself. There ain't no ceramic pots. There's no outer layer anymore. So we can do our life looking good with a great ceramic pot, like some of you here are chiseled. It drives me crazy. But on the inside, you can be dead, but you look good. But on the inside, when we step in that instant from this side where we're living our eternity to that side, and the Lord looks at us, there's nothing to hide. It's just our soul. And he says, well done with your time. Well done. Well done with your talent. Good job. Well done with your treasure, to your generosity. Well done. The cuddlies are feeling uneasy with that, but the disciple was going, I want to be like that. I want to be the best of the best. I don't want to have an outer casing. Everyone goes, oh, good, you look really good. But I want this bit. I want this bit to be alive and growing from the inside and maturing step by step as I trust in God's gradual dazzling of his trustworthiness to me, his faithfulness to me. He's so faithful. Does that make sense? Let's pray. Father, we...
Thanks for listening to this message from Gateway Family Church. We hope you join us again for another great message next week. For more information or to contact us, head to gateway.asn.au.